Our next speaker, she's a journalist and has published The Good News Club, The Christian Right's Stealth Assault on America's Children. Which is exactly what I just read. All right, I had it on there. I was happy. All right. Please welcome Catherine Stewart.
Hi. Hi. Can everybody hear me okay? Thank you so much. I want to offer a special thank to the organizers of this fantastic event. This is really exciting to be here. Several years ago, actually quite a few years ago, I interviewed for a job in Madison, Wisconsin. That's the only other time I've been here. And I interviewed with a company, and as we were chatting, they said, we think you should live in these, pointed me to these sort of suburban areas. I said, well, I'd like to live downtown near the university. It seems like such an exciting place. And the woman doing the interview said, well, you don't want to live there. It's full of undesirables. So if you guys are the kind of undesirables in this part of town, that's where I want to be. I want to talk today about a range of initiatives, well, really about the initiatives by the religious right to infiltrate and undermine public education in America. And I think this issue should be of concern not only to parents and educators, but, really to anybody who cares about the future of public education, to the future of anyone who cares about our country as a modern secular democracy, because education is such an important institution, and it's under attack these days. Public education is facing challenges on many fronts, and challenges by the religious right represent only one of those challenges, but it does represent a significant challenge. I want to tell you a little bit about how I got into this topic. I didn't go looking for the issue. It came to me, and it started with one of these events that at first seemed so small, you scarcely notice it, until suddenly you're in a new world. 4 years ago, I was living in Santa Barbara, California, with my husband, our baby boy, and our little girl, who was in public elementary school. Now, I don't know if any of you have seen that Saturday Night Live skit, The Californians. That was sort of my life. I was really not thinking about church and state issues. I had a job at a really lovely sort of lifestyle magazine. Southern California is really not known for religious conflicts. And the only culture wars that I remember were between the Pinot drinkers and the Syrah drinkers, or the paddle boarders and the surfers. And those got pretty heated, let me tell you. But then I learned that an after-school group called the Good News Club was coming to our public elementary school. So at first I didn't think it was a big deal. I thought, what could be wrong with a group called the Good News Club? It's got such a nice name. It turned out that they were promising Bible study after school. So I thought, no big deal. I am a big free speech advocate. And I also happen to think that the Bible is something that should be studied even in public schools from a non-sectarian standpoint, as history, literature, or anthropology. I took a Bible course in high school. It was really fascinating and fantastic. It was taught from a non-sectarian standpoint. But I started to hear stories from parents in town whose kids went to schools where Good News Clubs had been established. And I started to hear about the kids attending the clubs were starting to target, and we're talking little kids here, 5 and 6 year old kids, was turning these 5 and 6 year old kids into, they were starting to target their peers for faith-based bullying and bigotry. A little girl named Zoe, who I know, got into an argument on the playground with one of her classmates named Ashley. They're both 6 years old. They're kindergartners. And Ashley said to her, "You don't believe in Jesus, so you're going to go to hell." And Zoe said, "That's not true." So things got heated, and Zoe stood her ground. Fair enough. I believe that kids have the right to have religious discussions at school. And the teacher overheard the exchange, and she explained, different religions have different perspectives on these different issues. So Zoe was fine with that. But Ashley, the girl attending the Good News Club, she was devastated, and she started to cry. She said, "How can that be? I know it must be true, because they taught it to me in school. And they don't teach things in school that aren't true. How can they lie to us in school?" Now, I tell this story every single talk I give because it gets to the heart of the trouble with Good News Clubs. I don't have a problem with kids having religious discussions with their friends at school, but I do have a problem with very little children being deceived into thinking that their school favors a particular religion, and those kids being encouraged to use that fraudulent misperception to try to convert and bully their peers. Now, that misperception on the part of these children is no accident. The Good News Clubs use the school's cloak of authority to indoctrinate kids as young as 4 and 5 years old in a fundamentalist form of evangelical Christianity by giving them the false but totally unavoidable impression that the school endorses a particular form of the Christian faith. Now, the funny thing about the arrival of a Good News Club at our school was that nobody in the parent body, it seemed, had invited them in. Not only that, but there was no shortage of Bible study in the community already. In fact, the school was right next door to an evangelical church, and many of the school's parents worked in an evangelical college up the road. Our school was in the zone, so I would say between a third to a half of the parents at the school were in some way affiliated with that evangelical college. And we had never had a kind of dispute about religion at our school before because it just hadn't come up, you know? We had a very tight community. So a group of the parents who actually were evangelical themselves, most of them, met with the Good News Club leaders, and they said, you know, we agree with you, we're on your side, but you know you're just not right for our school. And one of these parents actually was head of the after-school program thing, and she had excluded all kinds of clubs for one reason or another. I think martial arts, they didn't want kids learning how to fight at school. She had sent a yoga class across the street because some of the evangelical parents were concerned about yoga. So she sort of assumed that she had the right to do this. Well, we're excluding yoga, martial arts. We only want stuff that's right for our school community, right? So she offered them free and better space in the evangelical church that is literally next door to the school. And the Good News Club leaders demanded that they be in the school. They declined the free and better space in the evangelical church and said, school is where we wanted to be. They desperately wanted to be there. So, you know, I'm an investigative journalist, and I started to ask some questions. I thought, why do they need to put their religious program in the public school? Who were these people behind the Good News Clubs? And what did they really believe? And is what they were doing legal and consistent with the constitutional principle of the separation of church and state? I spent 4 years researching the topic. I attended Good News Clubs in different public schools and talked to their leadership. I went to a Good News Club training session, several trainings actually. I joined a mission project in Boston, and I attended one of their national conventions held by their backers in Alabama. So I have some answers. First question, what is the religion of the Good News Club? Well, it turns out that it's not just any old kind of Christianity. Let me give you an example. Now, this is a textbook by the Child Evangelism Fellowship, the organization that sponsors Good News Clubs. These lesson plans are taught in every single Good News Club coast to coast. And, you know, there's no room to deviate from the script, and, you know, you have to sign a sort of statement of doctrinal purity, so there's no room for spontaneous reinterpretations. So here's the second weekly lesson in that standardized series of lessons. And some of you might remember the story of the Amalekites. In the first book of Samuel, the Israelites are having some trouble with their neighbors, the Amalekites. And God orders Saul to exterminate them all, including the children and the babies. Saul does his best to carry out the deed. He exterminates the women, the children, the babies, and most of the livestock, but he saves the king and some of the taster-looking animals. Now, according to the scripture, God is outraged by Saul's failure to execute the order in full. This is an interesting and challenging story, and I'm sure it can be one of the many interesting and challenging stories in the Bible. I'm sure it can be interpreted in many ways by different biblical scholars, but I do want to note that this particular story of the genocide of the Amalekites has a history of showing up when one sectarian group has set its sights on exterminating its rivals, Rwanda and Northern Ireland being just two of the many examples. But the relevant point here is that this is a lesson. The Good News Club thinks that this particular story should be brought to the attention of 5 and 6 year old children in public schools. And the lesson the Good News Club wants to teach is quite clear. If God gives you the order to kill everyone, you must do it to the letter, or you are committing the sin of disobedience. And the Good News Club manual specifies here, if only Saul had asked God for the strength to obey completely, and in three separate places in the lesson plan, there's a teaching statement. Teaching statement, have the children shout, God will help you obey. Over here again, teaching statement, have the children shout, God will help you obey. And down here again, have the children shout, God will help you obey. So, with a fundamentalism this deep and an emphasis on obedience at all costs, it was no surprise to me that when I went to the National Convention of the Child Evangelism Fellowship, I heard keynote speakers ranting about the so-called homosexual agenda. One of them actually wrote a book called Same-Sex Marriage, Putting Every Household at Risk. I was like, really? Every household? Even mine? Be at risk? I mean, you know, we have our issues, but I can't think of a single one I could pin on any of our gay friends. Other keynote speakers promoted creationism, which is actually taught in Good News Clubs in public schools, and expressed another keynote speaker, several of them, expressed hostility to public education as an institution because it fails to affirm them in their sectarian beliefs. One of the keynote speakers said, when they removed Jesus as the foundation of public education, what was once for the good became a consequence of evil. And another keynote speaker at that convention was promoting a book that he'd co-written with Ken Ham. I don't know if any of you know about Answers in Genesis. It was called, I wish I had it with me, Darwin's Plantation. It was basically about how evolution's racist roots, I think, was the subtitle. And in that book, he condemned interfaith marriage, which he referred to as interracial marriage. As I learned more about the culture of the Good News Club and the CEF, there's something that kept nagging me. These groups do meet a lot of resistance in school communities like mine, even school communities where there's a large preponderance of people who ostensibly share their viewpoint. Although I have to admit, I want to point out, it's very important, there is a spectrum within the evangelical world. A huge spectrum, and Good News Club falls on one very distinct end of it. It doesn't represent all evangelical thought. But they do create disharmony in school communities like mine, and perversely, the Good News Club leaders often seem thrilled about that strife. They seem to operate with an indifference to the school community, or even a kind of hostility toward it. The religious right wing often claims to represent small town values, and they act as though they are the last defenders of the American family. But division among neighbors is not, to my mind, a small town value. At the CEF's national convention, I heard members of the organization talk about breaking down the doors of the public schools, and some spoke about kicking in the doors. At a seminar on securing permission to enter the schools, Good News Clubs had met with resistance from school communities were urged to sue. They were offered an 800 number and promised free legal representation. We're in a battle with Satan, said Matt Staver, the founder and leader of Liberty Council and a keynote speaker at that convention. Satan is a strategist of war. What I finally came to understand in my research is that the people behind the movement and if not all the people in the movement, at least the people behind the movement, would actually be happy to see public schools fail. They think public education is evil. In its non-sectarian form, public education is satanic. When Staver describes public schools, he says, tanks are there on the playground. Bullets are being hurled over kids' heads. The mushroom clouds are billowing. Now, it's hard for me to square Staver's visions with my experiences of the places that my kids learn their times tables and memorize state capitals and learn about 13 colonies and things like that. But for such extremists, if you have to destroy the school community in order to save it, that seems to be a pretty good deal. Their philosophy seems to be, if you can't own it, break it. Now, here's another troubling feature of the Good News Clubs, and my second point. I can't emphasize this point enough. The leaders of the Good News Club and the Child Evangelism Fellowship rely on deceit. There are two kinds of deceit. They deceive children in one way, and they deceive parents and members of the community in another way. I think the deceit of children is the more serious type, so I want to address it first. Convincing 5- and 6-year-old children that their religion is affiliated with and sanctioned by their public school and thereby and therefore the state is not just a byproduct of their activity. It's not just like an unintended byproduct of their activity. I believe it is part of a conscious program. They know very well that 5-year-olds cannot make a distinction between what they learn in school by their teachers during the school day and what they learn after school, sometimes from those same teachers and sometimes even in that same classroom. I want to give you an example of a few of the tactics that the Good News Clubs across the country have employed in order to reinforce that false impression among the kids. In Santa Barbara, I learned that a gym teacher was teaching a Good News Club after school. So, you know, kids view teachers, I mean, teachers are really figures of authority at school. So, you know, they're being told to you know, run faster or whatever in gym class by the gym teacher, who they're encouraged to respect, and they're, you know, not to talk back to her. And then right after school, when she's teaching a Good News Club, little kids, 5- and 6-year-old kids, think that she has that same authority of the public school. And this has happened at many other schools that I've where I've met parents or interviewed or even seen firsthand. I was up in Seattle, where a Good News Club instructor was actually volunteering in the same classroom during the school day 4 days a week, so that, and she didn't have kids or grandkids at the school, but here she had inserted herself in the life of a school as a volunteer, and the kids kind of viewed her as, you know, almost like a second teacher, certainly a teacher's helper, because she was volunteering in the classroom. And that created a lot of controversy among the parents, because they knew that their little kids were viewing this woman as a figure of authority in the school. And then that carries over, you know, between 2:15, you know, when the bell rings, and 2:20 she's teaching, if you don't believe in Jesus, you're going to go to hell. The kids think that that carries the authority of the school. In Valencia, California, a mother told me that a Good News Club teacher entered her kindergartner's classroom before the bell rang and basically effectively did a roll call. Okay, who is attending the Good News Club and was allowed to set up before? Effectively separating the children by religious affiliation. All of this, these things are designed to make children believe that the club is part of their school, little kids. Another level of deceit has to do with how they represent their beliefs. This is a second level of deceit, deceiving parents and members of the community. They systematically make an effort to present themselves as broadly Christian, with non-threatening labels like non-denominational or interdenominational. These labels are nothing more than effective marketing tools. In fact, most activists I met who work for the Good News Club believe that most Americans who call themselves Christians really aren't, including, oh, I gotta read this. Do I have it here? Yeah. Catholics, which I heard described as a whole other religion, oh, they also don't believe US Episcopalians, United Methodists, liberal Congregationalists. You know, I've heard those things described as New Age religions. Here's what I found about Catholics. I think that would be very interested. The Church of England would be interested to hear itself described as a New Age religion. Okay, this woman, Claudia Calderon, she's the head of CEF Spanish Ministries, or one of them at the time. She was described as, you know, one of their heads. And she was giving a seminar on how to evangelize Hispanic children, which I gathered was really about how to evangelize children from Catholic families. And what she was telling a room full of Good News Club teachers was, you know, they call themselves Christians. The priest told them, you know, you're Christians in this church. It's a very fine line when the children tell me they are Christians. They say they're Christians because they're born in a Catholic family. So she goes on to say, how can you basically subvert the messages so subtly that the Catholic parents aren't alerted to the fact that their children are being converted into a different form of the Christian religion? Says, one thing to remember when you're talking to them is never don't discredit the Catholic Church. You don't say Catholic Church is bad, Catholic religion is bad. She says, at least not at the beginning. Because the children go back to their parents and tell them everything that was said. So they will go back and tell them everything. And you know what's going to happen? The parent is going to say, you don't go there anymore. because they are going against our beliefs. So there's that deception of the parents as well. And of course, free thinkers are enemy number one in this world, but that doesn't surprise any of you, I'm sure. They also practice deceit in advertising. Several weeks ago, I got an email from a father in Woodward, Pennsylvania. He attached a flyer that his seven-year-old daughter had brought home from school. And the flyer was advertising Good News Club and said nothing about the religion that the Good News Club teaches. I don't even think it had any references to religion at all. Instead, it offered kids prizes, balloons, and yummy snacks, and promised parents that the club teaches kids how to behave. Quote, "We work hard to help your children make choices that will help them succeed in life," the flyer said. Get this, in capital letters, at the bottom of the flyer, it said, "If your child cannot attend the club, please call the school." Now, this deceptiveness of the seeming opt-out clause is astonishing. It seems designed to make, to intimidate parents, or at least make them think that the club is either, if not demanded by the school, that at least it's strongly favored by the school. A third thing I discovered is that the Good News Club reflects a significant shift in focus in the evangelical missionary world. In the course of my research, I attended conferences for evangelical missionaries. It used to be about reaching what they called poor countries or unreached part of the globe, and they called that the 1040 window, based on the idea that the countries that were the most unchurched were between 10 and 40 north latitude. So thousands of missionaries were dispatched to Africa and the Middle East and Asia. And if you look at the globe, you'll see that most of those areas are between 10 and 40 north latitude. Now today, the new thinking in the missionary world is that your target must be young people, very young people, kids, like this, kindergarten, grade school demographic. Here's another quote from Matt Staver. He said, "Anyone who studies warfare knows you focus on the most strategic part of the human chain link if you're trying to direct the largest cruise ship in the world. You focus on the one tiny thing in the cabin there that will ultimately change the rudder to change the entire cruise ship's direction. You focus on the youth." He said, "It is the most strategic age group that we have." So in the missionary world right now, it's not geography that matters, it's age. There's a high-level missionary strategist, Louis Bush, who in fact coined that term 1040 window, and he noted that 85% of all conversions to Christianity occur between the ages of 4 and 14. He came up with this new idea called the 414 window, and he published a book about it in which he reproduced a graph. I'm going to show you. I don't know if you can see it. You see this, it's like a little pie, it's like a little chart. You see this one? This is like from 0 to 4, nobody converts to that Christianity because they don't speak yet, really. 4 to 14, that's like 85%. That's the large bar there. And then afterwards, it's considered what they would, what the speaker there called the repair stage. As in, we're just repairing them from all that damage. Don't waste your time. So basically, the idea is to, if you're going to do evangelical missionary work, you want to get the most bang for your buck, focus on those children. And a quote from the introduction to the book, it says, I'll read the quote, the introduction of the book. The quote is, "Political movements like Nazism and communism train legions of children with the goal of carrying their agenda beyond the lifetime of their founders. Even the Taliban places great emphasis on recruiting children," and concludes with, "May God inspire you to join us in his battle for the little ones." So the fourth thing I learned about the Good News Club is that it is the product of aggressive legal advocacy that is now enshrined in a 2001 Supreme Court decision. Let me tell you a little bit about it. In 2001, the Supreme Court ruled in a case called Good News Club versus Milford Central School. The court held that religion is nothing more than speech from a certain point of view, and therefore these religious activities are protected by the Free Speech Clause of the First Amendment. In that decision, the courts pushed free speech so far that the Establishment Clause, which prohibits government endorsing or funding of an establishment of religion, has been eviscerated. The Supreme Court opened the door, and now programs like the Good News Club are using public schools as what they call mission fields. Now, I think this does raise a really interesting question, which is religion nothing more than speech from a certain point of view? I think it's important to note that our legal code doesn't think so, because our legal code offers religious groups significant legal privileges and exemptions. Religions, for instance, don't need to abide by anti-discrimination law, as other for-profit and non-profit groups do. Our tax code doesn't think of religion as just speech either. Religions enjoy significant tax privileges and certain tax exemptions. I believe that our founding fathers put the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause together as separate and distinct from the Free Speech Clause, because they too recognize that religion occupies a kind of special category, meriting its own protections and also its own concerns, keeping it free of government institutions. But since that 2001 theory, the theory in public schools has been that as long as every religion gets a crack at the kids, then it's okay. And who cares about the educational mission of the school, and who cares about the children? Now, I want everyone, religious and non-religious, to have their freedoms recognized. But I do want to note Good News Club is very divisive in public school communities. And public education, I have to also note, is not anything goes. It is about teaching children, little children in elementary schools, a set of facts and skills that will help them have a chance at a better future. And I'm going to talk about a little bit later all of the forces, some of the other religiously driven forces that are attacking public education. I believe that this attack on the school community and attack on public education as a whole is part of a kind of overall effort to destroy public education. How do we get here? How do we get to this point where we have all these Good News Clubs in public elementary schools? The part of the story that you know is that a number of conservative justices were appointed by the Supreme Court. And the part that you may not know is that the new judicial philosophy was bought and paid for by money coming from the radical end of the religious right. Who is behind this? If anybody is driving this agenda, it is the legal advocacy groups of the religious right, the ADF, or also called the Alliance Defending Freedom. They recently rebranded themselves. They used to be called the Alliance Defense Fund. The ACLJ, Liberty Council. You may not have heard of all of these organizations, but they have combined budgets of over $100 million a year. They have public schools in their sights. I want to read a couple of quotes from some of the leaders of the religious right. I think Jerry Falwell set the agenda when he said, I hope to see the day when there are no more public schools. The churches will have taken them over and Christians will be running them. There are other thinkers and the religious leaders of the religious right, such as Robert Thorburn, who said, I imagine every Christian would agree we need to remove the humanism from public schools. There's only one way to accomplish this, to abolish the public schools. And he urged Christians to run for school boards, Christians of a certain stripe, of course. We're not talking about all Christians. You've got to be the right kind of Christian. And he said, your goal, once on the school board, must be to sink the ship. D. James Kennedy, who is another big picture thinker of the religious right, continued the drumbeat of hostilities against public education, asserting that the modern public education system was begun in an effort to deliver children from the Christian religion. And he alleged that our public education system has been engaged in a virtual act of war on America and has placed the very survival of this nation at risk. So, in my view, igniting needless religious wars on public school battlegrounds, turning child against child, and deceiving children into believing that a particular religion is endorsed by their school is a part of this war on public education as a whole. Public elementary schools are about education. And education is not anything goes, as I mentioned before. It is about, it's an institution that is intended to deliver, to give children a chance at a brighter future. But the Good News Club and its friends have little respect for these worthy goals. Their coordinated initiatives create precisely those ills against which the separation of church and state was intended to defend. The separation of church and state is a way to bring peace to societies that are inherently pluralistic. But the Good News Club and its friends sow division. The separation of church and state is a way we ensure that education answers to evidence and reason, not dogma and superstition. But the Good News Club and its friends are helping to spread ignorance. The separation of church and state is a way of securing individual freedoms, and that people have a right to participate in society without being forced to conform to any particular religious creed. But the Good News Club and its friends are forcing us to support and subsidize their religion, and they want your kids to feel bad if they're not one of them. The separation of church and state is not a luxury of our system of government. It is the foundation of it. The Good News Club is part of a much larger movement in our midst that sees the separation of church and state as unintelligible. This movement rejects the values of inclusion and diversity upon which our nation was founded. In an effort to discourage the kind of critical thinking and rational discourse that inhibit the spread of radical religious extremism, it has set its sights on destroying the system of public education itself, and it is succeeding. Unless we confront that fact directly, we may well keep all of our rights, yet lose the system of education that has long served as the silent pillar of our democracy. Thank you very much.
All right, we've got some time for some Q&A. You said you wanted to, like, there's some people that...
Yeah, I know. I want to call, there's a lady named Carol who is in... I didn't have a chance to address it in our talk, but she is very interested in the voucher issue. And I know that she has something to say about that because the voucher issue is a big issue here in Wisconsin.
So can I get a show of hands for folks that already are on... and some awareness of Scott Walker's plan to expand vouchers to private schools. Okay, fantastic. Very, very good. Okay, fantastic. So I guess because it dovetails so well with the topic, I wanted to make sure I showed up. And just to be quick, since you're so educated, you're so probably already aware, I just wanted to take note that you're going to see some headlines that say that Scott Walker is moderating his path. But this is language that is tucked into the budget bill. There are two Republicans that have made a lot of noise about objecting to expansion, Mike Ellis and Lindsey Olson, two senators. Mike Ellis says that they have a majority of Republican senators that are on board with them. But they are not removing the voucher program from the budget. That is not their intention. From what I'm reading, their intention is to modify it such that the standards of public schools would apply to the vouchers.
Thanks. I want to mention that the issue of vouchers concerns me because voucher money, the vouchers, what they do is they divert money from the public education system and end up use it to fund private schools, some of which are religious. And if you look at the states where voucher programs have been expanded, such as Louisiana and Florida, much of that, no, that's okay. No, it's okay. I have a very short amount of time and a lot of people that I want to get to, so...
Yeah, so okay. Basically, the point is, the moderation is not removal. The money will still go to religious schools. You would have to contact them and insist that be completely removed. And I wanted to note that in Racine and Milwaukee, where it's already in effect, the great majority of the schools that are getting the money are religious schools, and the majority of them are teaching creationism. So I hope that this puts it on your radar screen to read the issue.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for bringing that up, Carol. I really appreciate that. I saw another question over there in the back.
I just have a very quick question, which is, what can we do? What if there's like one or two or three things that you suggest people do to fight it, both parents and, you know, people who don't have kids in the school system? What should we do?
Thanks. It's a really good question. I mean, you know, look, my job as an investigative journalist, my job is to tell people what's happening, do the research, and I think I've done that job very well. I do think that the communities have a role to play in, I think we can't begin to face our challenges until people know about them. So I think it's really important to educate yourself about what's happening in your community and also educate others about this, about what's happening. I think that school boards have a great role to play in introducing the kind of anti-bullying programs in public schools that specifically address the issue of faith-based bigotry in addition to all the other kinds of bigotry and bullying that are out there that specifically address these issues. Many of the anti-bullying programs out there, by the way, I have to say, are really faulty. I attended an anti-bullying lecture in Tennessee as part of a state-mandated character education program. And the person who was delivering the speech, the anti-bullying speech, was a traveling pastor whose presence in the public school had been made possible by members of the local clergy. And the takeaway message was that if a boy bullies a girl, meaning gets her pregnant, the right and moral thing for that girl to do, even if she's only 14 years old, is to have the baby and, quote, not allow that bully to ruin her life. So there's a lot of, you know, so it was supposed to be a lecture about, you know, not bullying kids because of their ethnicity, their religion, their body shape, their gender, perceived sexual orientation, real sexual orientation, whatever. And instead it was really an anti-abortion rallying cry. But because, you know, so a lot of the anti-bullying programs out there are unfortunately not really doing the job. But there are a lot of good ones out there that are not faith-based, and I believe schools should adopt them. Okay, that's number two. I also, you know, if religion is just speech, shouldn't it be subject to the same kind of regulations as other forms of speech? For instance, if a school board, let's say, adopted a policy of excluding all activities that belittle children. For instance, if a soccer club came into a public school and told the children that unless they learned all the soccer rules, they'd be tortured by some demonic soccer deity or some demonic soccer being, I think it would probably be excluded from the school pretty quickly. Or if an art club came in and said that unless the kids learned how to draw a picture of a tree, you know, the way that they were told, they were going to be, you know, they were going to be tortured, could that be excluded? I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know how this kind of these kinds of policies would hold up in court. But I think it is an interesting question, and I think there are lawyers who could look at it. You know, there are ways to kind of create policies that don't discriminate amongst religious and non-religious groups, but that kind of enforce. You know, in school we don't speak rudely to other people. We don't, you know, threaten them. We don't tell them, we don't tell little children that they deserve to die, that kind of thing. So that's a kind of one of the legal strategies that some people are starting to look at. Do you have a question here?
Wait, we have a question over here. I got my microphone.
Okay.
I've always needed a microphone. Have any of these programs been questioned, challenged, and removed? For that matter, any stats as to how pervasive, how many of them exist?
How many of them exist? There are nearly 4,000 Good News Clubs in public elementary schools around the country. Their presence has grown between, I think, 2001, 2010. Their presence grew in public schools 728%. When I started this project, there were 4 Good News Clubs in public elementary schools in Santa Barbara, and today there are, as of last summer, there were 11. They're growing quickly. Have any of them been challenged? Because of that 2001 legal decision, it's been very hard to challenge. Once a school opens what is technically known as limited public forum, that is to say, as soon as a school lets in after-school soccer or art, it has to let in a good news club based on that 2001 decision where establishment clause concerns were swiped aside. So that has made it very difficult. But some schools have shut down what they call the forum altogether, which means they exclude after school soccer and after school art, and they therefore are able to exclude a good news club. Now, to me, that's a sad diminishment of the role of the public schools in our lives, in our communities. Public schools are more than bricks and mortar. They're places where we set aside our differences and come together in support of our children and their future. They're places where kids, I think kids and parents also need those after school programs. I want my kids to do after school sports activities and art, especially in this era where schools are under financial constraints and are cutting such programs from their budgets. So I think it's deeply concerning when a school actually shuts down the after-school forum. I almost feel like that's doing something that the religious right would want. They want public schools to feature less in our collective collective lives as communities, because they think public education, secular education, is evil. You know what happened in our public school community? There was so much outcry. And it was a very unusual situation because it's a very small school, but there was so much outcry against the Good News Club from religious and non-religious parents alike that everybody got together. And by the time the Good News Club leaders actually came to our school, the parents had kind of, you know, agreed collectively, gosh, you know, even if we are in line with what they want to do, we're going to keep the kids away. So the Good News Club did fail ultimately in our school community, but that is very unusual, and I think it had to do with the very particular complexion of our very small public school, public elementary school. I saw a question right here. You.
Just a comment for all the parents in Madison, and then a quick question. I went to my daughter's middle school one day to pick up a bus pass, and there were two gentlemen outside handing out Bibles. And I got really pissed off, went inside, talked to the principal, and the principal had already dealt with it herself, and regrettably had been given the answer that as long as they're out on the sidewalk and giving away free Bibles, then they do so. So here were all these kids coming out of middle school getting free. And I can't remember if it was old and new or just New Testament, irrelevant to me, but there was nothing that could be done about it. So I think it's yet another indication of how invasive that is into our public education system. The question I had for you was, covertly or overtly, you attended all these good news missionary training things. I mean, did they think you were a potential missionary, or did you go there as an investigative journalist? I'm just curious.
Thanks for asking. I just went places that I was allowed to go, and I used my real name, and you know, Google was active. You could have Googled me at any point. So, but me, I just went places I was allowed to go.
Anything when I went, I mean, I could have walked into.
Well, you know, like for instance, when I went to the Child Evangelism Fellowship's National Convention, the protocol is you register with a convention center directly, and so I registered with the convention center directly. So thanks so much for your question. Oh, you're talking about Bibles. I actually brought something here. The Gideons has been trying to distribute Bibles in public schools with very limited success, very mixed success, I should say, for many, many years. You know, they go to a school where the principal is sort of favorable to their mission. They're allowed to leave a box of Bibles in the hall or in the library or whatever, and other schools are excluded. Really, they should be excluded because it's illegal for adults to walk in to a public school during the school day and hand out religious literature to children. But they've hit the jackpot with something called the Life Book Movement. Look at this. This is a cute little book. It looks like a CD cover. If I was like 12, I'd want to get my hands on this. It's called the Life Book, and it's a project of the Gideons International. And what they've hit this jackpot with this idea that if it's, as long as it's the kids doing it, even if the effort is scripted and funded and organized by adult, it's okay. Now, again, I support the right of children to have religious discussions with their friends. But I think it's important that we all know what's happening. When your kid walks in home with one of these life books, it's an evangelical gospel written specifically with teens in mind. Like real teenage handwriting in the margins, just so the kids don't draw the wrong conclusions from the text. And they get what they call student missionaries to hand out this little book to other kids at school. And in 3 years, they've distributed, I think it's over 3 million of these on the public middle and high school campuses. And it sort of gets around, it subverts, it doesn't subvert like the law, but it subverts the spirit of the law, if not the letter. Do you know what I'm saying? And the leader of the Lifebook Movement, he called it a God-given loophole. He said it brilliantly threads a separation of church and state loophole. So I think it's very important to just kind of be aware that this kind of thing is happening. Because 4 years ago, I had no idea about any of this. But what I've discovered, and as I travel around the country, talking to different parents about the different religious initiatives in their kids' public schools, I'm discovering that there's more religion in public education today than there has been in many years. I spoke with Charles Haynes. He's works at the Pew Center. I think he's one of the directors of the First Amendment Center at the Pew Forum. And he said to me there is more religion in public school today than there has been in the past 100 years because of this range of initiatives by the right to kind of infiltrate public education. And I believe the goal of this infiltration is an undermining of public education as one of our valued institutions. I saw a question right over here.
Yeah, we have time for one.
Yeah, one more.
We heard from Jesse Galef this morning that it is illegal for a public school to refuse a secular student group the right to meet, and they give other extracurricular groups the right to meet. The good news clubs here are going to do exactly the same law to get access to public schools. So are you in favor of discrimination against Christian group? And so, how do you justify that?
Thank you so much for the question. And there's one big answer there, and that is age. I don't have a problem with secular students, Christian athletes, Jewish athletes, whoever, getting together after school at the high school level, performing acts of worship, talking about religion with their friends. Those groups are student-led, and they are targeting high schools. I thank you so much for your question, because I think it's so important to make this distinction. Good news clubs are in public elementary schools. They target children who are too young to read. The centerpiece of the program is called the Wordless Book. Thanks for giving me an opportunity to talk about that. The Wordless Book has no words, just pictures and shapes and images, and it's used to convert children too young to read. And good news clubs are necessarily adult-led. Every good news club leader is a teacher, and they go through a very particular training, and they have to sign a very particular statement of faith. So thank you for making that distinction between student-led groups at the high school level and adult-led groups that are targeting kindergartners. Thank you very much. It's been a great audience and great questions. Thank you.